Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it is Patrick. There is no new episode of Same Day Shipping today, so instead we are putting out, we are putting into the feed here an episode of my Nintendo podcast called Nintendo Cartridge Society, which I co-host with Mark Mitchell. On this episode, it features Colin J. Morris. You know Colin. He is our guest on the episode. We are talking about the 1995 film Mortal Kombat, which is exactly as good and as bad as all of us remember it. So if you enjoy what you hear, Mark and I do two episodes of this Nintendo show every week. One episode is a news episode, and the other one is like a special topic, something fun. Kelly has been on the show, Ryan has been on the show, and we talk about a lot of fun stuff, and especially if you're into Nintendo, I think you might like it. Anyway, let's get into it, enjoy it, and we'll be back with new episodes next week. Coming up on this episode of Nintendo Cartridge Society,
Mortal Kombat!
It's dangerous to go alone, so the Nintendo Cartridge Society goes with you. Welcome to Nintendo Cartridge Society. My name is Patrick Ellers, and I'm joined, as I'm always joined, by my co-host, Mark Mitchell. Mark, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Super excited for this episode. It's been so long since we've had a guest.
And the guest, we are joined by none other than comedian and wonderful friend, Colin J. Morris. Colin, how you doing?
Good, guys. Thank you so much. It's good to finally be on.
Well, okay, so Colin's previous appearances on this show have been erased in the name of not elevating that Castlevania Netflix show. That's why we haven't had a guest on, Colin, the whole time that we've been in quarantine here. And we're like, we need to get Colin on because we've erased his legacy.
I'm surprised but relieved that my podcast episodes were erased because someone else got canceled. So, you know, that's...
Right, yes.
Right. That's a great, great point. It's not too late.
I know, Mark. Mark has it out for me.
Let's see what we can't dig up in this episode. We are, today, we are going to be talking about the 1995's Mortal Kombat, the film, not any video game. But before we jump into that, a couple things we got to do, as always. The Sonic Forces borrowing program, if you would like to borrow my copy of Sonic Forces. You can try to do that. All you got to do is email us at NintendoCartridgeSociety@gmail.com and give us a mailing address where we can send you my copy of Sonic Forces. Mark, what's something that might happen instead?
You might get the goose. You might get Patrick's copy of Untitled Goose Game.
That's right. There is a goose spoiler in the mix there. You may want Sonic Forces, but you might get Untitled Goose Game. You might want Untitled Goose Game, and you might get Sonic Forces. It's just whatever happens, happens. Get on this list. It's a perfect program, of course. And then last thing, we are not doing a second episode this week. We're just talking about Mortal Kombat. If you haven't seen Mortal Kombat recently, go back and watch it and then come listen to this episode. And then next week, we're also only doing one episode where we are predicting what will happen with Nintendo in 2021. That is, of course, filled with your predictions because you have been emailing us those already. However, we've recorded that episode by the time this episode comes out. So don't send us any more predictions right now. We are full up on predictions, or we will be. We will have been full up on predictions. Anyway, just one episode next week, and then we'll be back to two in the new year. All right, Mark, Colin, are you ready to get into our main topic talking about 1995's Mortal Kombat?
Absolutely.
Okay, so I thought first thing is first that we should establish what our relationship is to Mortal Kombat as a franchise, as a concept, as an abstract entity, as a series of games and movies and whatnot. Let's start with Colin, because I'd love to know what Colin's relationship is to this stuff.
Well, okay, so with Mortal Kombat, that was definitely a game owned and played by neighborhood kids. And not in my house. Mm-hmm. Mortal Kombat was not allowed. I think it was the reputation, obviously, of Mortal Kombat in the early 90s. Like, it got to the parents. It spooked them pretty hard. I liked it. I was never, like, coordinated enough. I was a button masher, especially in fighting games. Mm-hmm. And so I could elevate to a certain point, but I was the kid who, you know, the neighbor or the big brother had to get to Goro. I could never reach Goro myself. So.
Right. Mortal Kombat feels like something that would aesthetically appeal to young Colin. Am I wrong in that?
No, you're absolutely right. It was
all right.
Big globs of blood, spikes, skulls everywhere. Yeah. Like, it's very much, that the desire for that was denied to me as a 9-year-old, and it has actualized as a 33-year-old. now my whole aesthetic is silly, cartoony, horror or gothic bloody stuff. So it came around, and perhaps my parents were right to try to keep me away from it.
My Mortal Kombat experience is like almost identical to Colin's. Like, Mortal Kombat was definitely, absolutely not allowed in my house. So it was something that like
forbidden.
I heard about and wow. Then would go to like friend's house or neighbor's house. And that's where I would experience Mortal Kombat. My play style is identical to Colin's. Like, we should at some point play Mortal Kombat against each other. Because I am also just a button masher. Like, that's my, like, fighting game style in general. Mm-hmm. And, and I thought that Mortal Kombat was so scary. Like, I kept anticipating the worst. Because I didn't, like, experience it that much. And so the legend of, like, the finishers was, like, so much bigger in my mind than what, like, it actually turned out to
be. Well, so speaking of which, I have a question mark. Have you ever successfully done a fatality? Because I have not.
No.
Not once.
No, not even close.
And here's where Patrick tells us about how he used to hang out at the local comic shop and win all the tournaments.
No, I was never good at Mortal Kombat. But I mean, I was, the first one came out in the arcades in like 1992 or something, 91 maybe. So like, you know, I was 9 years old when this game came out, which means I was intensely interested in it, and had already been playing Street Fighter 2 in the arcades, which I was okay at, but I was not very good at Mortal Kombat. But that didn't make me like love it any less. So I remember reading.
What's the difference between Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat? Because I mean, to me, a fighting game is a fighting game. What could possibly be different?
So, especially in the early days, there weren't like solid fighting mechanics in Mortal Kombat. That like everyone has the same basic move set: high punch, low punch, high kick, low kick. Everyone can hold back and low kick to do a sweep. Back and high kick to do a roundhouse, down and high punch to do an uppercut. Like everyone has the exact same moveset. Whereas in Street Fighter, every character's individual moves are all unique. There are three punches, there are three kicks. If you are holding any direction, it changes what that input does. If you're in the air, if you're ducking, all of it. Like there are just so many more tools, and the combo system in Street Fighter is more like based on the like frames of invincibility and frames that you can cancel out of and stuff like that. And Mortal Kombat is really like Mortal Kombat is a button masher's game where like you can get success with bashing on those buttons, as I'm sure both of you found
to a limited degree. Yeah. To a yes. degree.
But I remember when Mortal Kombat 2 was coming to Super Nintendo and Genesis. I remember being on the phone with my buddy Pete Farr as he was reading a copy of like EGM or one of those magazines. And he was reading about how detailed the characters were in the game, reading it out loud to me on the phone. and we were just like, whoa. And we were so excited for Mortal Kombat 2 to come out. Mortal Kombat 2 was one of those super expensive cartridges on the Super Nintendo, one of those like $70, $80 cartridges.
Oh, they cost that much back then?
Yes. Because they needed to be fatter cartridges with more memory in them.
Oh, wait. So it was the Genesis equivalent, the one with the taller one with the yellow box in it?
No, I think they just get like better. You're thinking of like either a Game Genie or the Sonic and Knuckles, where like you locked in Sonic the Hedgehog 3 to it.
Was certain games on Genesis I remember were different size cartridges, and I imagine that was just a memory thing.
I think that Nintendo just always had a little bit of extra space in the cartridge to begin with, that was something that Nintendo was doing for a while, was adding new technology to their games by physically putting it in the game cart instead of in the system. Like that's where Star Fox comes from, with like the 3D graphics on a Super Nintendo. Otherwise it can't do that.
Yeah. Very cool. Also, now that you tell me that in 1991 Mortal Kombat was $70, I know why it was banned from our household.
Okay, that was Mortal Kombat 2 in 1993. So yeah, it was too much money. But I loved those games even mostly back then, and I'm sort of like an observer of the series now. I haven't picked up a new one in a while, but I always like them aesthetically. And I always try to make myself watch a video of all the fatalities strung together. But they've gotten so gruesome. Have you guys seen a recent fatality?
No.
I think I saw some of the ones around like X or whatever game that was.
Yeah.
Where like people's faces are getting sliced off. Yeah.
People's faces are getting sliced off. People are getting like ripped in half. There's a Johnny Cage one in the most recent game in Mortal Kombat 11 where he uppercuts their head off, and then they do like stop taking, there's like, you know, the clapper, like the marker, and then they like do take two, and then like he does it again, and like they do it three or four times because it's like they're trying to get a good take of this uppercutting the head off.
That's very fun.
It's good silliness. But okay, so that's, I think we all understand where we are with Mortal Kombat abstractly. Mortal Kombat the movie, which is what we're talking about today, 1995. Had we all seen this before we watched it for this? And if so, when? Mark, you're already shaking your head.
I'd never seen this movie. It has like a reputation from like the back pages of EGM where like Sean Baby would make fun of it or something. But I had never seen it before.
Colin, had you seen this movie before?
Many times, yes. this was, and it, again, it's probably because you could rent this from the video store for $3. And, you know, that's how I could have access to Mortal Kombat as opposed to getting a very expensive game. And I always was more into movies than video games, generally speaking.
Yeah.
But yeah, Mortal Kombat, today was probably like, if I had to guess, my 7th or 8th viewing overall in the last 25 years.
Yeah, again, 25 years. We are, of course, celebrating the 25th anniversary of Mortal Kombat. Colin, had you watched it recently?
No.
Like, within... Because I know I also saw it a lot when it came out. I saw this movie in the theater. Mm-hmm. I may have seen it twice in the theater. I don't recall. And I saw it, you know, a couple other times in like junior high school and high school, but it, you know, had probably been about 20 years since I had seen it. So I forgot, you know, basically everything that happens in this movie. There were a bunch of times where I was like, is that Ali Larder? And then it wasn't, you know?
Yeah, I was actually really surprised by this viewing of it today, because it is the first time I was ever aware of any sort of plot in the movie. Like, I had no idea when I was watching it. It was so shocking because I recognize, you know, the iconic things, the Johnny Cage scorpion fight particularly, which yes. I imagine we'll mm-hmm. get into in great detail, because that was awesome, just as awesome as I remember it from a kid. But like, yes. the whole plot, the whole thing where there's a tournament that determined which realm got to control all the other realms and stuff like that, I had no idea any of that was in this movie. It was shocking.
Well, and it's like barely in this movie. Like, I don't think we should give it too much credit. I have to say, guys, I spent the, like, me and this movie got off on rough footing because my expectations were set all wrong. Because, you know, I'm watching the opening credits. I'm watching the opening credits, and like,
I have no idea where he's going.
What could his expectations have been?
Yeah, this is wild.
It's 1995's Mortal Kombat, Mark.
So I'm watching the credits, mm-hmm. the opening credits, and Christopher Lambert's name comes up, and I'm like, oh my gosh, the dad from The Sound of Music. So I spend the entire movie waiting for the dad from Sound of Music to show up, and I'm like, is he the Emperor of Outworld? What is going on? And then I get to the end of the movie, no dad from Sound of Music, and then I look it up and realize that that's Christopher Plummer. I spent the entire movie waiting for Christopher Plummer to show up, and it didn't happen.
This is a unique use case here, Mark. But you didn't care. Did you enjoy seeing Christopher Lambert actually in this movie?
Christopher Lambert, he plays
Raiden.
He plays Raiden, and the voice that he uses, I'm assuming that it's a put upon. Where like the first time you meet him, he like whispers everything, and then like, I know, but there's no one else. And then like later, it gets like super raspy. Mm-hmm. I thought he was fine.
Now that's generous. I thought he
it's
was...
a weird performance, right? He's laughing at times that I don't understand why the character is laughing.
Yes, and that was a really good joke. When he laughs at like Liu Kang talking about his dead brother or something, and then he apologizes for it immediately after.
Yeah. It's very weird. I did a little. I did a little research, but really, I just went to the trivia section on IMDb for Mortal Kombat.
There you go.
And Christopher Lambert was the most expensive actor on this movie. And so yes, so they had originally only hired him.
Boy, did they get their money worth?
they originally only hired him to do like the scenes in like the studio in LA. And not actually travel to Thailand, where you know, a lot of the outdoor scenes were filmed. But he wanted the movie to succeed so much that he went and did, like, appeared on set, like, pro bono.
No.
Yes, for the Thailand parts. I mean, they paid him. He got paid for the rest of it, but the rest of it, he did it for free.
As if that was what was holding the movie upon the razor's edge.
Right, it already had the Mortal Kombat name.
Oh, so strange. I like to imagine that. So I'm not really familiar with Christopher Lambert's career outside of this movie. I got his IMDb up here.
Highlander. Highlander is like the only other thing that I.
Oh, is he the Highlander?
Maybe.
He may be a Highlander? No, there can only be one.
Okay. Well, he does appear in 2019 in an episode of The Blacklist as Bastien Moreau. So that's kind of fun.
I mean, he is first billed in Highlander. So, like, he must be the Highlander.
I mean, he's got...
I mean, I have to admit, I've never seen the Highlander. So
Mark,
I'll take
neither.
Your word for it. Have none of us seen the Highlander?
I have not.
Oh, no. Oh, no. What's like, happened?
For whatever Christopher Lambert's performance is in this movie, like, I can't have any ire for it because I have saved all of that for whoever plays Johnny Cage, who is so not fun. He's not
yes.
fun.
Well, it's a not fun actor giving a not fun performance of a not fun character, right? Like, every part of him is despicable.
Yeah, but I like when he's got to carry his luggage. I don't know. Here's the thing. I like a heel. I like a heel. I always have, and I always will. If you could get someone who thinks that they're better than me and then knock them down a few pegs, I'm going to laugh at their foibles. I just will. Also,
Colin,
when he punches Goro in the nards, as an eight-year-old, that I think was the height of comedy I had ever seen in my life.
Yeah, home run.
Colin, so as I was taking notes, I put stars next to the parts that I was like, this might be my favorite part of the movie.
Okay.
I'm looking back through my notes now, and there are three stars, and they're all Johnny Cage scenes with him doing, like, it is literally when he's at the docks and he asks
Liu Kang.
Yeah, Liu to take his bags, and then Liu throws the bags in the water. And he's like, and Johnny Cage is like, thank God I didn't ask him to park the car. I laughed. That got a star for me.
It's a good line.
When Johnny Cage stands up in the boat and he's like full up with luggage, I laughed. That got a star. When he punched Goro in the nards, I laughed. That got a star. Those are the three stars I gave to this movie.
Oh, there's a fourth star you're forgetting about. And that is Lyndon Ashby. The actor who plays Johnny Cage.
Wait, are we totally turning around on Johnny Cage? We like what? Coming in being like, forget Johnny Cage, and now we're like, yay, Johnny Cage? What happened?
No, it's such a terrible character, and this Ashby person who played him, like, I wrote down in that first like action sequence, the one where he's like on set. You don't know it at the beginning, but he's like on set. That I was like, ooh, Johnny Cage, action dentist. Because he has no, like, charisma or anything. He's, like, somebody who came out of, like, a dental convention and, like, also maybe knows martial arts. I'm assuming they cast all these people because they know martial arts. But it's so unnecessary because nobody does cool martial arts in this.
Well, I think there are two good fight scenes, two good, like, martial arts sequences in this movie. And in my extensive research of going to IMDb and reading a little bit more about this movie, I found out that they were both late additions to the movie, like after test screenings, decided that there wasn't enough action in the movie, and both are choreographed by the Liu Kang actor, who hadn't been able to choreograph the rest of the movie, but you know, because they were bringing back for like reshoots and adding more scenes, just choreographed the fights. And I wonder if you. What two fights do you think those might be?
Sub-Zero and Scorpion?
Those are both in the... So, Scorpion, sort of. The Scorpion fight originally ended with Johnny Cage kicking him in the forest and not going to the, like, you know, underworld hellscape that is, like, all the scaffolding and lights. So that part was added and choreographed by that actor. And then the fight with Human Reptile in Outworld was also added late. And I think that's the best fight in the movie.
Oh, hard disagree. I think the one with Reptile is a big letdown after the fights with Scorpion and Sub-Zero.
I liked it because it didn't let any, like, dumb superpowers or, like, special moves get in the way. Like, I do not understand what's happening with Scorpion's hand and that, like, snake Audrey 2 harpoon thing that lives in there.
It is. It's his little buddy. And then, you know, he's a tough guy, you know, tough demon, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they don't give him a moment to really grieve when he smashes his face against that tree, which was another thing I didn't pick up at as a kid, that the snake is definitely alive, and when it hits that tree and there's a little blood splatter everywhere, it is definitely no longer alive.
Also, maybe the only blood in the movie?
I think there's, like, a little under-nose blood from time to time.
Oh, yeah, yeah, uh-huh.
Or, like, a lip gets punched or something.
Shang Tsung in, like, the last fight, right? He's getting, like, beat up, and then you realize that he's, like, super-powered because his lip is bleeding, but he's otherwise, like, unfazed. I don't want to skip too far ahead, but talking about, like, bloodless, I could not believe that Chekhov's spikes at the very end, we don't even get to see Shang Tsung, like, land on them. Like, it's possible in a PG-13 movie. I could not believe how, like, lack of Mortal Kombat-ness there was in the Mortal Kombat movie.
Yeah, so let's talk about that a little bit, because it is crazy how a video game franchise that is notorious for its hyper-violence and levels of gratuitous gore gets adapted into a movie form where violence and gore are commonplace, and it's not present. There's a point in this movie where Goro is holding the four-armed Prince Goro is holding Art Lean over his head, this character that we meet on the boat and then only ever see again during this fight. And I was like, oh man, I don't remember him tearing this guy in half, but I can't wait to see him do it. And then nothing happens.
Yeah, Art Lean's death is so lame. Because you have Goro there, and he, like, is in his grasp, and everybody's like, do it, kill him, and then he just kind of, like, bonks him on the head real hard.
Yeah, it is a stone-cold bummer how little how little gore and hyper-violence. No one even gets a head cut off. What is this movie?
The Red Hood. He gets decapitated.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. No, you're right. I'm sorry.
Trying to think, are there any other decapitations? So it's a lot of falling.
I guess the guy that Sub-Zero fights during that banquet that they just ruin for no reason, he gets frozen and shattered, and, like, Kano afterwards is like, I saw his guts and everything. And it's like, well, okay.
Well, he hung around and waited for him to defrost because he just had to know.
That's right.
Yeah, he took a piece of him with him back to his room and just waited for it to melt. Speaking of, like, Sub-Zero and Scorpion, and I guess, like, Human Reptile as well, it's amazing how, like, not cool those costumes look in the movie. Like, the pants, the cut of the pants is, like, all wrong. It's like they're, like, busboys at Red Robin.
Yeah, that is true. They're not helped at all by, like, their characterization in the movie, because they're just goons, right? They're just superpowered goons. Mm-hmm. And, like, one of the things that I think is good or appealing about, like, the narrative of Mortal Kombat as a franchise is that each of the characters have their own, like, You know, it's a Mortal Kombat movie should almost be like a Avengers style event where you're like, I can't believe that this like warrior who fought his way out of hell and this like other guy who is part of, you know, a warring ninja clans and also this movie star and this, you know, international criminal. And then you like this SWAT team, military, whatever, and Sonya Blade, that like all of these disparate pieces come together and have to fight in this tournament. And the movie sort of necessarily is like, okay, well, a lot of these characters aren't characters. They're just punch machines. And like, I just, Scorpion's so cool and Sub-Zero is so cool, but like they are so painfully uncool in this movie.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, the coolest character, in my opinion, is Kano. I loved his performance. I loved the character. He was horrible. Again, I like a heel. And an extension of that is I like an all-out villain. And he was the most interesting one. Like, the fact that he was, like, doing it for money instead of, like, honor or power or, you know, to uphold the tradition of his realm or whatever, made him 10 times more interesting than any other character's motivation. Like, he was just, he was the true goon, if you think about it, but was really, like, great. He stepped up into the role.
Well, and he knows that that's his role, right? Like, there's something so, like, I don't know, charming or reassuring, I don't know what it is, about him sitting at this huge banquet table opposite Goro. It's just the two of them. And he's like, just,
as
you know,
we learned,
heart's
the
content.
Two of them have nothing to talk about.
No, just nothing to talk about. He has to tell him about all the frozen guts he saw. But that, like, Kano, you know, it's like when doctors pull out their gross out stories because they don't have anything else to talk about with people. That's what Kano's doing in that moment. But yeah, like that Kano is so chill in the presence of a 9 foot tall, four armed, you know, otherworld prince. It's bizarre and makes him one of the weirder characters in the movie. Also, can we collectively wrap our heads around what is happening with Kano's face?
No, I was actually hoping that you'd be able to, as I've the default like Mortal Kombat authority the room, is that like something that comes from the game? Is he a cyborg underneath that? What's going on?
I mean, in my opinion, everything about Mortal Kombat the game, like in the early days, and Mortal Kombat the movie, like how and why are so far beyond the point. It's like it's like a bunch of frat guys just got together, but not even like your typical frat guys, like frat nerds, like the ones who really love Kung Fu, but for, you know, the wrong reasons. Yes. Like, they got together and, like...
The white guys that like Kung Fu.
I mean, and as being among their ranks, I felt very seen by the Mortal Kombat movie. I think it's just, like, a cool-looking thing, and they decided to go with it, right?
No, but I want to dig into what it looks like is happening there. So, like, I think there are two options, right? And one option is that Kano's skull, or the majority of Kano's skull, is metal, and like the skin is starting to like grow over the parts of it. So like, but there's still a big chunk revealed, or there is a like metal plate that is like grafted on top of his head. But which is it? Is the skin under the under the metal plate, or is the skin covering metal? Which is it?
Mark, any hypothesis?
Yeah. To me, what it looks like is that he's like a Terminator, and his right, and so he has like a metal skull, maybe entire metal skeleton. Although I guess not, because Sonya like breaks his neck.
We will talk about that because it's absurd. But keep going.
So yeah, that's what it looks like to me. It looks like he has a Terminator head, and you know, like some of the skin got removed, and so you're seeing just like a little bit of metal from underneath.
Interesting. I always assumed it was the exact opposite. I thought he lost his eye and like his what do you call that, like his orbital socket or what have you, like that whole chunk of his skull came out in like a fight or a factory accident, I don't know, and that was like they. So wait, now okay, now I'm coming up with a whole backstory. So now,
yeah,
they,
I love it.
They stick a chunk of face, metal face, on there, and he's like, oh, "Give me the red eye, then, isn't it?" Because he's like, if there's options. It's like when you get you get to choose the color of your braces or your cast. He goes for the red eye, which
yeah, totally.
And then they
everyone's gonna sign it.
But either because he paid extra for the red eye and the chrome finish on the plating, he cannot afford a skin graft, or because of who he went to, like whatever back alley mobster plastic surgeon, the skin graft didn't take. And he eventually just ended up cutting that part away because it just wasn't very good.
Wow.
Well, I'll tell you this, Colin. I agree with you that I think that's what they were going for, but I don't think that's what it looks like. I think it looks like he has a metal skull, but I agree that I think they were going for he had this like applied to his face.
Yeah, I think that's totally right. And I think that's what the character normally looks like, but like, yeah, for they made the skin around it so puffy, and I wonder if that must be makeup and not just like an allergic reaction to the glue that they used to stick this thing to his face.
Oh God, no! Could be that too. That's his real skin, is what you're suggesting?
That's what's really happening to him.
Believe it or not, that's actually his real metal plate.
Oh wow!
Yeah, he had to wear a contact lens to make the eye red, though.
Oh, I thought you were going to say to make the other eye not glowing red. Fun fact about this actor who I'm not going to look up the name now. He's not Australian, but played the character as Australian. And then they changed the identity of Kano in the games to be Australian. He was not previously.
That's a difference maker. That's like, you know, like no small parts, right? Am I right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
That's hilarious. Also, this is how well I know accents. I looked up Trevor Goddard, which is his name, earlier today.
Yes.
And it's his bio says he's from England. I just assumed that was an English accent. I could not tell that was an Australian accent whatsoever. Is it?
Well, apparently, I mean, it was convincing enough that that's why they changed the nationality of the character in the games. I don't know. Again, the guy doesn't have a lot of screen time, and he just oozes charisma the whole time. So, can we talk a little bit about the fight between Sonya Blade and Kano? We're sort of all over the place here. But Mark, you brought up that he gets his neck broken by Sonya, and she does like like a leg grab. Like it seems like she's gonna do a thigh grab, but has him caught squarely between her shins.
Yeah.
And like around the ear, no, around the ears too. Her ankles are not locked. She is just pinching her shins around his ears, and it's enough to submit the Robo Man. He cannot fight any further after that. I was really let down by that. Speaking of choreography,
oh, so disappointing.
So disappointing.
Yeah,
that is the only storyline. I mean, you have Liu Kang's thing. With, you know, avenging his brother, and they talk about that a lot, but they don't really ever talk about the relationship with the brother, right? That's just like, oh, my brother's dead, I'm mad about
right.
it. That's all they ever say. But, like, Sonya has, like, much better revenge story in my mind, or at least, you know, the actor emotes better, and then you get to that fight where she's finally facing him, and it was so boring and, like, 20 seconds long?
Yeah. Well, and, like, Kano comes into it brandishing, like, the biggest, scariest knife someone could ever bring to a fist fight.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, it becomes a non-entity, like, right away.
That's a problem with a lot of these fights. Like, okay, the one right before Sonya faces Kano, when it's, like, Liu Kang versus the, like, cheetah guy? I don't really know what his deal was. Like, he wasn't really a cheetah, but he had, like, and yeah, like they gave him animal noises on the soundtrack. Like that fight was so lame too. I really feel like this whole movie would have been so much better if like either everybody was like 15% better looking or the combat was like 15% like more interesting. If either
now,
of those things
on,
had happened,
on.
It would
I
like
got,
tip
I gotta
over
push back
into like watchable.
I gotta push back on Liu Kang. I don't think he needs to be 15% better looking. I think that Liu Kang is a babe. I like seeing him at the beginning of this movie getting out of bed. Like, I'm into it.
No. Don't get me wrong. In my personal hotness rating for this movie, Liu Kang is number one with a bullet.
Okay, Mark,
like, Liu Kang,
you know that's how we end every episode, right?
It's why our Mario episodes go on so long.
Honestly, I know. Oh, jeez. I can't think of one cast member who where is there room for 15% better looking, Mark?
Oh, no. You all,
come on.
So wrong. Okay, I think you have Liu Kang is number one. Katana and, like, Sonya are up there. Kano is, like, close fourth. Scorpion and Sub-Zero are, like, tied. Goro's pretty hot. But then, like, what? Johnny Cage is, like, Johnny Cage.
You got to go back and put Shang Tsung in there somewhere because he's a good-looking man as well.
Okay, maybe between Kano and Scorpion and Sub-Zero, just because, like, we can't see their faces.
Oh, just put them between Scorpion and Sub-Zero.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, if everyone was just a little bit better at fighting or the fight scenes were a little bit more dynamic, that, like, the movie could be a lot. Because it actually is impressive how many, or, like, how much this sticks to, like, the structure of actually playing Mortal Kombat, right? Like, there are... I think 9 separate one-on-one fights in this movie, which, like, I mean, you know, adhering to how a video game feels, like, it making that, applying that to a movie is not something that happens in video game adaptation, right? Like, they normally feel totally different than what they're coming from, but this sort of feels like playing Mortal Kombat.
But I feel like they missed, like, such a easy opportunity to make clear, like, what the tournament is or the stakes. I mean, yeah, like, they keep talking about, like, oh, the tournament. Yeah. But it's not like we ever see a big board, right? Like March Madness, where these characters are, like, moving up. Like, you have no idea. The matches just seem to be random, and they seem to happen at, like, any time.
Right.
Where it's just like, oh, yeah, we're at dinner, and then all of a sudden, like, somebody's going to be fighting. Like, what is the context for Scorpion and Johnny Cage's fight in the... forest? Like, they're just there all of a sudden.
Well, and they do make a big deal about it at the end when Sonya gets kidnapped, and it's like,
oh my gosh,
dude, they did Sonya pretty dirty in this. Because, all right, so they set up, yeah, the whole thing where one of those three was going to determine the destiny of the tournament, right? It's like, these are, mm-hmm, the three most powerful fighters of mankind. And then when Sonya gets done dirty in the Kano fight because the choreography stinks, right, then, mm-hmm, really doesn't do much except argue with Johnny. Johnny gets two marquee fights. He gets Scorpion and Goro. And then Liu Kang gets, I think, two. Yeah, I think he gets two more fights in the meantime. And then Sonya shows, mm-hmm, back up at the end, and all she does is get kidnapped and, like, refuses to fight. Where's the character who's, like, refusing to fight? Where has she been the whole movie? I feel like she would have been like, heck yeah, let's fight, I'll rule you. And I think it would have been cool even if she died in that fight and the guys then show up just as it's too late, you know?
Yeah, it's... Go ahead, Mark.
I was just going to say, I laughed so hard when... So she gets kidnapped. Then they eventually cut to, like, the interior of the, like, tall tower where the climactic, like, fight happens.
Ooh, and cut to is generous.
It's a long, yeah, drawn out, like, advance to that moment. And she is in, like, her, like, slave Leia transformation,
God, yes,
is so awful.
She looks like she's going so backstage, like, at a GNR show. It's insane.
Yes, 100%. I was going to say Poison, but yes.
It's so shameful. Like, I know that Liu Kang is kind of like the framing device for this movie, or, right, like, it's kind of like his story more than anybody's, but I feel like all three of them should have been in that fight with Shang Tsung at the end. Like, it should have been all three of them working together and not just, like, everybody kind of hanging out on the bottom floor while Liu Kang, you know, like, beats up Shang Tsung.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thrust of the movie is, like, it's a problem that they don't really have anyone's motivations or obstacles really like established in any meaningful way. Like right at the beginning, when Raiden is addressing the three of them, he says like, you have to get over your ego, looking at Johnny Cage, get over your obsession over your enemy. And he's talking to Liu Kang, and your quest for revenge, she says to Sonya. And then like Sonya doesn't need to get over it. She just gets revenge and then then becomes a damsel in distress. And then the other two aren't like ego and your desire to defeat your enemy. Those are things that they both end up using, mm-hmm. right? Like Johnny Cage uses his like his swagger to punk Goro after punching him in the nards. And then Liu Kang beats his enemy. So like, I don't know what he's talking about.
No, Raiden doesn't know nothing about anything. Very clearly.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
He was a useless god on Earth.
I know we like the part where like Johnny Cage punches Goro in the nards, but I feel like that fight is a letdown otherwise. Like we 100%. Never really get to see like Goro as a character is actually looks pretty good. Yeah. Like it's actually pretty impressive.
Yeah. Agree. He looks like a Ninja Turtle basically. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but we never really get to see Goro like let loose. And after that fight, like Johnny Cage like punches him in the nards and then he runs away and basically just like kicks Goro off a cliff. Like it's so anticlimactic. Yeah.
I think the long and short of it is this is a movie made by and for people who don't care. Because like there's no way you make that Goro, and I'm sure you don't see good fight sequences with him. Like, even when they're doing the montage of Goro's fights, you just see his enemies fall one after another.
So many. Like, there were so many people falling to Goro.
It's just got to be an expense thing. Like, they couldn't get the fighting in that costume down.
Totally.
But if you go to a screening and you see that, like, cool, like, it is kind of like a throwback to earlier 90s or, like, 80s era sort of, like, animatronic stuff. And then you look at the cartoon reptile and you're like, yeah, these both belong in the same movie. Like there's no quality control going on.
Yeah, that's right. It took 13 to 18 performers to get Goro up and running in any
cool,
given shot.
Man, that's really cool.
Doesn't that sound awesome? Like, I wish he was just in the whole thing, just punching people. That'd be so cool. Do we have to talk about the reptile design or like what is happening there?
Well, is there any before 1995, is there any reference to reptile being like an actual sort of dinosaur in the video games, or that was written for the movie?
So in Mortal Kombat 2, one of his fatalities is he takes off his mask. And it is like a big lizard head up there, and he spits his tongue out and grabs your head and pulls your head into his mouth and just eats it. So like he's got a lizard head for sure, but not one so different from a human head that he can't just wear a mask over it.
To me, it feels very like, hey, remember how you like little boys like Jurassic Park? Well, guess what? We've got a little Jurassic Park in our movie too.
Very little Jurassic Park. And in this scene, he's invisible because then we don't have to render him so much.
How did you guys feel about the music? I I laughed really hard the first time, like the fight sequence kicks up and you hear Mortal Kombat.
So the very beginning of the movie, like the opening moments of the movie.
Which, by the way,
yeah.
So I'm still on a sleep schedule that's held over from my last job where I was waking up at 4 a.m. So I decided, okay, 6 a.m. Like I've waited long enough, I can start Mortal Kombat. Totally forgetting that is the first noise that will come out of the television, and scared my girlfriend, very much half to death at that first opening scream. But it was all worth it.
I wish more movies did that. Like, you're just watching Jaws, and it's like the theme from Jaws.
Jaws!
And then it's like, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there are obviously, like, music cues in this, like, entire fights that are scored with, like, hilariously funky pieces of music. It might be the Johnny Cage Goro fight where I was like, what is this music? It actually happens kind of a bunch. But yeah, I mean, like outside of that the famous like Mortal Kombat, you know, dance song, which was everywhere in 1995, mm-hmm. There's not really any good music in this thing.
Well, so did you, this is kind of a deep cut and I didn't catch it myself. By the end of the movie, my girlfriend had woken up and joined me to watch this monstrosity. The final...
She's a hero.
She is. The final song in Mortal Kombat is the opening song of the movie Hackers. So, it is now canon that
right?
one story leads directly into the other. We haven't figured out the details yet. But it is kind of like a fun 1995 95 double feature, I think.
Yeah, not bad.
I mean, both kind of bad, but
both kind of, yes, of course, but as a double feature, at least, you know, I don't know, aesthetically coherent? No. Mark, did you bring up the music for a specific observation about it or
no, just that, like, okay, so yeah, it's like them screaming Mortal Kombat happens at the beginning, and then you don't get any of it for like right. 36 minutes until the next fight sequence. And when that sequence finally hit, it was so, it's not particularly good, but it was so cathartic because
yes.
I was ready for more combat. Give me the combat with a K.
As with most things that I watch now, seeing all of the like fight sequences, like the early fights in this movie that all take place on like the beach or like this cool sand pit somewhere, just made me miss being places with people.
Even if locked in combat to the death or
yeah,
to save the world.
Patrick even watches then. The Netflix series You, and he's like, oh, I wish I was trapped in a cage. If someone else was there, at least.
I was mentioning this before we started rolling, but I'm watching Columbo now, and anytime he goes to a restaurant, I'm like, oh, I wish I was in that crappy restaurant.
Dude, I'm watching TV as well, and I get upset with people when they get close to strangers.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is not the time!
Yeah, my husband and I are watching The Amazing Race. We've been watching like a bunch of seasons of The Amazing Race, and it just seems so like impossible that you would travel to all these different countries and that you would just be like interacting with people all the time. It just feels so remote.
I wish that they had just committed to a season of Amazing Race this year, but they have to quarantine for 2 weeks every time they get off an airplane.
Everywhere they go. and then we have to like see them get tested. They have to figure out like where the testing site is in that city.
Right. Yeah. Have to wait for their results before they can move on.
They realize they're in Florida and like there are no testing sites.
No, but you could go to a movie theater, so that's rad.
Oh God. Everyone stay home, stay safe. Protect yourself and everyone you love. What other fights haven't we touched on here? We haven't really talked about the horrible Liu Kang katana fight.
Oh yeah. I in addition to my personal hotness rankings, I also have like a ranking of like best combat, and I didn't even put that fight on there because katana like does not register in this movie in the slightest.
Right. She participates in a fight, loses, I guess, but only because Shang Tsung says that's enough, and then the fight's over. And then doesn't steal her soul? What happened there?
But she's like purposefully doing poorly because she's trying to give Liu Kang like pointers. Like
yeah.
She's helping out.
Yeah.
But also Liu Kang knows that that's what she will do because, okay, so Katana is the ward of,
the Emperor of Outworld.
Yes, the Emperor of that world.
Yeah, Shao Kahn.
Thank you. But she's like kidnapped against her will and her whole family and their kingdom has been destroyed. So he's talking to Goro in that excellent scene with Kano about how Katana must be kept from the humans at all costs because she cannot be allowed to interfere with his plans for the tournament. cut to, he puts them, he's in charge, he's the shot caller. He puts them in a fight, and it's not even like a normal fight to the death. It's like a warm-up or something.
Yeah, it's very strange. And then, like, she is seemingly only doing it so that she can get close enough to him to say, in your next fight, use the element that brings life. Which, like, just say throw water on him, please.
No, I let it slide right, because maybe that's how you talk when you're 10,000.
Yeah, maybe
yeah,
that's...
So in the next fight, Liu Kang is fighting Sub-Zero, and so there's, like, a bucket of water, and he, like, flings... Sub-Zero is, like, getting ready to do, like, mystical, like, ice power stuff, and he creates this, like, ice dome around him. So Liu Kang, like, flings water from the bucket, and from momentum, it, like, it, like, turns into ice as it's passing through Sub-Zero's dome, and then it, like, impales Sub-Zero, and so that's the way he gets out of it.
Yeah, well, and it's... I mean, just like in the first fight with Sub-Zero where he's fighting that, like, rando, when he starts doing ice magic, everyone is like, all right, stand back, let him do his ice magic for a little bit. We don't want to interrupt the ice magic.
I said the same thing. If I were fighting Sub-Zero and he started to do the ice magic, I would use the opportunity to punch him in the face.
Yeah,
personally.
Or the Nards.
It's so cold.
Frankly.
I'd get out of there, personally. I wouldn't have been invited to the tournament, but...
If Johnny Cage can get in, anybody can get in.
Yes,
Johnny Cage is tricked in, though.
Yeah,
his, who he thinks is his former.
For what purpose? Why did Shang Tsung want him to go?
I think.
I don't know.
Who was that guy that he was pretending to be to trick Johnny Cage? Was that like his strip mall sensei from when he was doing Taekwondo in the early 90s?
Yes, Master Boyd. Master Boyd.
Yes, that's right.
Right,
good notes, Mark.
Johnny Cage's whole thing, it's so dumb. I'm sad that I'm even talking about it. Johnny Cage's whole thing is that the press doesn't believe that he is, like, actually good at kung fu. And so his Master Boyd, or Shang Tsung in disguise as Master Boyd, is like, boy, the press is really getting at you. Hey, I heard about this tournament. If you win this tournament, that'll sure, like, show the press that you know your stuff. And Johnny Cage, the dumb... butt-kicking dentist he is like, yeah, that's a thing I'm going to do.
He walks
it's
off
so
set.
Painful.
That was not the final day of shooting because he was on a boat to Hong Kong the next day.
Oh, I mean, they weren't even done shooting that scene.
No.
Because he has this thing with the guy and, you know, we're going to call it back later and it's like, it's actually kind of funny. The, like, now's when you fall down.
Oh, go ahead, put a star next to
fall
it.
Down or whatever it is. Put a star next to it. More stars on the board. But yeah, so they're not even done filming this action sequence, and that's when he, like, walks off set because, like, the stunt guy doesn't fall on cue. I don't know. What were we talking about? Master Boyd.
I do think we need to, I feel like we should determine, because I have my personal rankings, but I do feel like we should determine as a group what, like, the best fight sequences are.
Okay, so by my count, there are 9 fight sequences.
Oh, wow.
And I have 8, but I didn't count the one that you just talked about with Katana, so that probably would be
should,
it.
Should we rule that one out, or should we include it in the lineup?
Doesn't matter to me. It's going to be pretty low either way.
Okay. there are... Let's we go through this, let's try to, like, put them into categories of, like, good fight... maybe just good fight, bad fight, or like good fight, passable fight, bad fight.
Yeah.
Okay. Starting with Liu Kang versus this random guy, when the Tiger Man or whatever, you said he had cheetah sound effects on.
that is the lowest.
I'd give that a passable.
Yeah, I think I put it in the passable too. I don't hate them fighting with the bow staffs. And it reminded me of right at the beginning of the pandemic, Sarah and I tried to watch Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, a movie which does not hold up. But there is a lot of good bow staff fighting in it.
It's closer to the bow staff fight in Robin Hood, Men in Tights.
Yeah. Okay, and then the next one is Sonya versus Kano.
Ugh, bad fight. So disappointing.
pretty bad fight.
Not only bad, but, you know, we already addressed it. Like, I was kind of hanging the stars up on that one, you know, and I feel like the movie set me up to do so. So I was really disappointed.
Yeah. It serves neither character well.
Yeah, agree. And then that's the end of Kano, the most charismatic actor and character in this whole movie. So that goes in our not squarely not good category. The third fight is Johnny Cage versus Scorpion. Good fight.
I mean, good fight. And you talked about the part when they go into like scaffolding hell. But this is, I would say, like the fight. And that's why I think it's so weird, its placement. It makes sense that you were saying that like the cool part of it was added later. Because the end of this fight is the most Mortal Kombat that this movie gets. Yes.
Totally.
Like, Scorpion takes off his mask to, like, reveal a skull. The skull, like, gets cut in half. Like, Johnny, like, cuts the skull in half using, like, the shield type thing. And then Scorpion explodes.
Yes.
Like, it actually feels like Mortal Kombat. And it's the one time in this movie that I'm like, ah, yes, the spirit of this video game.
Yes, and there was the blood that we were so desperately craving. And not just, like, some blood, but, like, thick. Like, you could see the platelets in his blood.
Yes.
It was gnarly. And then he gets cut, and blood oozes out while flames shoot out of the wound. It was, very metal, very Mortal Kombat.
It turns out all we were missing the whole time was a flaming shield that you can cut someone in half with. Like, that's all we were missing.
Yes. And the clean strike through the skull to, like, cut it open like a coconut.
Oh, yeah.
Excellent.
Beautiful.
Excellent.
I know that it's just scaffolding in, like, a warehouse, but it looked cool. I liked it. I liked all the it was like M.C. Escher's, like, scaffolding hell.
Also, what a wonderful, like, legitimately, what a wonderful contrast from the beginning of the fight, right? Like, they're in a place that's very natural, very well lit, very green, and then they are transported into a very red, very, like, obviously fake inside space. And it's dark. Like, and it's just, I don't know. It is very effective in giving, like, two different visual impressions of space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll rank it best fight.
Ooh, best fight. The next fight here is Liu Kang versus Katana. Do we want to count it? Or, I mean, it goes in the bottom no matter what, right?
I think it's poor, yeah, poor. All right.
I'm giving them letter grades as we go through this. I'm giving it a D. So far, the previous ones, Johnny Cage and Scorpion is an A, Sonya Blade and Kano is a C, and Liu Kang versus the random guy is a B. Okay, next fight, round five, as I have in my notes, Liu Kang versus Sub-Zero. This is the aforementioned use the element that gives life. This is a disappointing
fight. I kind of liked this one.
What?
I didn't hate it.
I don't believe it.
I didn't hate it. Well, I feel the same way that you guys are like about Liu Kang and the like tiger guy. Like that one, I don't understand. This one I thought was okay. Like, I think Sub-Zero being impaled by a giant icicle is pretty cool.
To me, it was so much was happening that was not the fight, and specifically not the fight choreography. It was like the bad special effects. It was Sub-Zero waving his arms back and forth. It was Princess Katana appearing to reiterate, use the element that gives life.
Though
her last words to him were, remember my words. And then she shows up during his fight to repeat her words.
It was like 4 minutes ago in the movie, too.
In movie time, it was so close.
I forgot that she physically shows up in the room to do it. It's not even like a voiceover, like a flashback or anything.
Wait, hold on. She shows up
during the fight.
She does show up during the fight, but it is voiceover.
I know,
though,
it's
right?
Both. Like, it's the worst of both worlds.
Yeah. Mark, how could... come on, this has got to be in the bottom class there.
I think it's a C. I think it's
okay,
a C. I think we balance it all out.
I give it a thumbs down, but yeah.
The sixth fight, which is Art Lean versus Goro.
Bad.
It's pretty bad. I don't know. I like the moment where Goro grabs both of his hands and then just like starts pummeling his face.
Yeah.
Like that's fun.
I was going to say, like, because of the emotional weight it carries for all of our main characters watching Art Lean.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I mean, Johnny saw him fight in London once, so you can understand that how this is the most important character in the film to him.
Why isn't this Jax?
Oh,
like,
dude.
Oh, such a great point.
Jax was a horrible actor.
Oh, 100%. Like,
Sonya,
the worst
no,
actor in this
don't,
movie. Don't
Sonya.
Go.
Guys, I don't think he's any worse than anybody else in this movie. I
You're
thought he was
out
fine.
Of your mind. You are insane. He was real bad.
He was really, really bad.
But, I mean, regardless, the character, should, like, take the Art Lean actor, make him Jax, and then, like, just so this character's death means something to anyone instead of, you know, like you said, Mark, Johnny Cage saw him fight once.
Yeah, or you have Goro tear his arms off because he's Jax,
yeah.
And then his soul gets taken, but then when he's killed, all the souls get released. And instead
right.
of going up into the clouds or what have you, Jax goes back into his body and goes out and gets some robot arms, and now he's ready
yes.
for annihilation. Come on, people. These things write themselves.
So where do we how do we want to rank this one? Mark, I think you're probably right. It's probably a C.
Yeah, if nothing else, it's really let down by, like, the climax of it where he just gets bonked on the head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, it's the Flintstones or something.
Yeah, I'd give it a D or C. It's not a great fight.
Okay. And then the next fight is, of course, Johnny Cage versus Goro. We got to give that, what, an A or a B?
A B for the Nard Punch. I think a B, but the rest of it sucks.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, it's so funny, because the whole thing, when I was a kid, this was the one that really stuck with me, you know, but I loved Johnny Cage, so what can I say? But he's got the swagger, he does the sunglass bit, you know, when Goro destroys his sunglasses, and he...
Ooh, that's pretty good.
It's like...
Those were $500 sunglasses.
Exactly. Like, the fact that he's just hanging, I like when Goro's hanging onto the cliffside. And he does nothing and just waits for him to fall. Instead of like a classic movie form, you know, he would like do something to make
doesn't
him fall.
Doesn't he say like, now's when you fall or
yes.
something like that?
He does say now's when you fall.
Yeah. And he just obeys.
The special effect of Goro falling is among the worst in the movie. And I'm counting even the like spiral up that tower at the end in Outworld. Because it's not even clear to me that Goro is falling down. It appears as though he is like receding rapidly into the distance. Like is somehow falling horizontally into a field of clouds.
Almost as if they put him on a dolly in a green screen.
Yeah, I was going to say. I think that's exactly what he's doing.
I just want him to drop a puppet from the top of a mountain. That's all I want.
Like a Kids in the Hall sketch.
All right. The next fight, we are in Outworld now. This is Reptile versus Liu Kang.
I hated this one.
Really? This one felt
I
like a
it was
meat
so
and potatoes.
No.
Like, it felt like a fight between like two karate dudes. I liked it.
I like it too. I like the aesthetic of the Outworld, the very like purple scheme, like sort of dramatic theatrical lighting of the whole situation. I really liked, I forget the name of the actor, but Liu Kang, his performance after he goes through the wall and he like struggles to get up. It's a very brief moment, but interesting that you said he choreographed that one, because I was like, oh, yeah, that's probably what it feels like to get thrown through a brick wall. Like, I felt that moment very briefly, and I appreciated that. I'd give this, like, a B+.
Liu Kang is great.
Yeah.
This is also, he's wearing that, like, totally shredded up tank at this point in the movie. So, like, I'm very much on board with this version of Liu Kang.
I did kind of like the way that, like, Reptile gets put into his human form. Like, he gets, like, thrown into the ribcage of that statue type thing, and then it, like, transforms him into human, and then Liu Kang, like, kicks him through a wall, and then, like, this, it's a statue again, but bugs fall out, because, you know, reptiles and bugs are the same thing. It doesn't make any sense.
That one, that did throw me, why he suddenly was the Oogie Boogie Man.
Why he's filled with bugs?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's that is confusing. But I mean, like, honestly, I think all of the rest of the fights incorporate the, like, special moves of the characters in from the video games. Even when it's, like, you know, supernatural or, like, you know, whatever. Like, Liu Kang in the next fight is doing the bicycle kick. Or does he do that in this
one? It's in this one.
He does that
in this one.
It's in this one.
So okay, I guess it is there. Never mind, I take it all back.
And you know what? I changed my mind. I'm upgrading because you just reminded me of the bicycle kick and how funny that was. I'm upgrading this to an A. This I think is second best fight.
I think this is second best fight too.
All right.
And then of course this brings us to the final fight: Liu Kang versus Shang Tsung. I hate this fight.
I did not like it. So long, so boring. The spikes are there, so you're like, spikes, spikes, spikes. So disappointing. He throws Shang Tsung off, and I truly believe it is not a ratings thing that we don't see Shang Tsung get impaled on the spikes. I really think it's budget. I really think it was like, we don't have like the money for these special effects. And so you just see him fall over. And then later you cut to like him being impaled by the spikes, because you could totally get away with it in like a PG-13 movie. Doesn't have to be super bloody.
Yeah, I mean. Sorry, go ahead, Patrick.
Go ahead, go.
Oh no, no, but yeah.
No,
you.
No. Oh no, but okay, I'll go first. The thing that I like, yes, I agree with you, Mark. It is a crime that we don't get to see that body fall on those spikes and spikes shooting out his chest. Like 100%, that's what we need. But also what we need is going into that moment is any doubt that Liu Kang is going to win the fight. Because like when they fight a little bit at first, then Shang Tsung gets the bloody lip and he's like, oh, yes, but now here are the soul guys. He fights the soul guys, no problem. And then he takes on the form of his brother. And like they talk for a second. Liu Kang figures it out, or I don't know. It doesn't work
whatever.
On him. Or whatever. And then Liu Kang and Shang Tsung like fight, and Liu Kang dominates the fight. Like, there's no moment where he's like up against the ropes or where you think like, oh no, how's he gonna make it through this one? He just keeps punching him and kicking him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And why weren't the soul guys like Art Lean and let's get Kano back here? You know, like, why not bring those guys back?
Actors who you already paid. Save some money for the spikes.
Look, if Christopher Lambert will stick around for free, then maybe everyone else will, too.
And you're not paying Christopher Plummer at all.
What if it was Christopher Plummer who came out as Shang Tsung's soul warrior?
I was waiting for it the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. The choreography was not as fun as it could have been. They let us down in so many ways. We already talked about, like, story-wise, they let us down with Sonya and Johnny. Like, this could have been a moment for all three of their journeys to be settled, but basically they kind of just didn't settle anyone's journey until, you know, the very end when we get the real ghost conversation with the little brother.
Yeah, double ghost conversations.
Double ghost. I guess they do. I mean, I appreciate that they set up that we have a shapeshifter situation, and at least they pay it off, because this does seem like the movie where they could have a character just shapeshift once. It's like, you can't shapeshift once. Come on.
No.
That's
that is crazy, though, that he shapeshifts right in the beginning of the movie in the first 5 minutes to trick Johnny Cage into coming to this tournament. When Shang Tsung probably could have just told Master Boyd about it, and Master Boyd would have actually done
that.
Did
you see
that
guy? He could have gave Master Boyd $100 gift certificate. And he would have gone.
Or is this like Or is this like a like Star Wars situation where like the retcon is that the Emperor was
Master Void the whole time?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Interesting. Very
the only reason Johnny Cage has a career in action movies at all is because he was targeted by a shape-shifting Shang Tsung like 20 years ago. This is great.
And I really hope that the situation was that he had a dojo in a strip mall, because that's what Shang Tsung, he had the foresight to see Johnny Cage and be like, I will do whatever it takes. Okay, suburbs of Baltimore, watch out, because you're getting a Taekwondo studio.
And all, like, the kids and everything that Shang Tsung had to, like, teach for so many years, right, to, like, keep the facade up. Because you can't just have a class with only right. Johnny Cage in
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
His parents would never allow
right.
it.
Right, and you got to show the parents, like, no, we've been open for 7 years. Like, this is a reputable brick-and-mortar business. We're a pillar of the
He's
community.
Accredited, for sure. Also, it's also a bummer that he doesn't transform into anyone for fighting purposes, right?
Right. Completely.
Well, I mean, like he should... the brother.
Yeah, but not to, like, punch Liu Kang.
Oh,
like...
I see. Yeah, yeah. Actual, like, yeah, that would have been cool. It would have been cool. You have him do, like, 10 people, and then you got, like, a cool Benny Hill sort of choreography where he gets punched, like, yeah. around a corner and then comes out as someone else.
Yes, 100%. Or he could turn into his friends and fight him as Johnny Cage. Mm-hmm. That'd be cool. Fight him as Sonya. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Fight him as Raiden. Really demoralize him. That would be cool. I'm bummed that we don't have any Raiden fights in this movie. I think that's a loss. How are we ranking this one? What letter grade do we give it? C?
I'll buy that.
D?
Yeah, I think an apathetic C.
Okay, do we actually need to go through and rank them now, like in order, or just putting them in categories? Is that enough?
I think putting them in categories is probably enough.
Okay, good.
It's more due respect than they deserve.
Let's talk about the end of the movie, because that's basically where we are now. Liu Kang wins the tournament. Earthrealm is saved for now. And what? So Shao Kahn, the Emperor of Outworld, just appears as a giant ghost at the end. So we can like hit the theme one more time. And like, I don't know. I hated the way this movie ended.
Yeah, it basically doesn't end. It just stops.
Yeah.
I think I had stopped paying attention at that point because I don't remember the ghost of the Emperor showing up at all.
Oh, he's huge. He's like Genie yeah. Jafar.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Oh, yeah. I completely stopped paying attention at that point then.
Well, I mean, it's totally inconsequential because as Colin said, the movie is already over by that point. I did like that going into the end of the movie here, Christopher Lambert's voice had gotten so raspy that he just straight up sounds like Jason Mantzoukas. That pleased me greatly.
Get the man a lozenge. I know that budgets are tight. Somebody check their purse.
Look, he would even pay for his own if you just ask
That's
him for
true.
It.
He's so invested in this movie.
Mark, your first time watching this movie, Colin, your first time in a long time. How do you feel about this movie now that you've seen it as an old, tired person?
I hated this movie. I hated it. It was so hard for me to watch. I don't recommend it. I've already listed my favorite parts, and somehow I think it tells you everything that I hated Johnny Cage as a character, like absolutely despised him. But the parts of my notes that I was like, these are my favorite parts of the movie, all featured him. It's a contradiction. I can't understand it. I feel trapped.
Yeah, I mean, this movie is a gosh darn joke, man. It was in 1995. It continues to be 25 years later. I feel like if I ever watch it again, I want to watch it with, like, a 10-year-old to like get their perspective on it. But I have no more use for the Mortal Kombat movie. It has, maybe it's just pushed the door open just a crack, because I have never seen Annihilation, and knowing that
neither
there is a 2021 Mortal Kombat coming out, I feel like I'm going to have to watch Annihilation now, and I'll go see the next one in theaters, you know, all if permitted.
Yeah, I won't make the commitment to seeing Annihilation, but the fact that the 2021 one will just be coming to HBO Max and we won't have to go see it in theaters makes me realize that we have just invited Colin, you know, back for part two of a two-parter about Mortal Kombat movies.
I'm sorry, part three. We're doing Annihilation.
Oh, no!
We'll do it on my Veronica Mars podcast if we have to.
Does anybody know, is Annihilation a direct sequel? Like, is it the same actors?
Some of the same actors. They couldn't get all of them back. It's a lot of the same
actors.
I
think Johnny, right? Isn't Johnny the main character of Annihilations, or am I just making that
up? Stop that. We're trying to get him to watch this movie. I actually sort of had fun watching this movie. My expectations were super low. Like, I expected it to be a train wreck with like some sort of fun campy elements, and like I think it does deliver on like some of the stranger parts of Mortal Kombat, if not the like violent parts of it, which is a letdown. But I don't know, I don't think this is a total wash. It like I don't know, I have fun watching this movie. All right, guys, that I think concludes our our discussion of the 1995 Mortal Kombat. Colin, thank you so much for joining us. Is there anything that you would like to plug?
I mean, first of all, thank you guys for having me back. I always love talking to you guys, and I appreciate, like, you have no idea how much I appreciate you guys carving out a non-video game section of this podcast so I could come on and talk about stuff. It really warms my heart.
I mean, anything to get you on the show,
man. I appreciate that. That's very fun. Yeah, so I'm currently co-hosting two podcasts. One is Same Day Shipping, the show about real love and fake relationships, which I co-host among other people with Patrick, who you may know from this show.
You might.
And that one you can catch every week wherever you get podcasts. And then the other one, which I mentioned just a minute ago, is my Veronica Mars rewatch, which I co-host with the hilarious Ryan Mogi. And we do insanely deep dives on the cult classic CW show Veronica Mars. And that is a bi-weekly podcast. And you can get that wherever you download your stuff. Oh, and that's called Come On Now, Sugar.
And I mean, you're not lying when you say insanely deep dives. I was on an early episode of this show, and I threatened to take us into a third hour, which at the time seemed novel. Now you guys regularly go for 3.5 or 4 hours.
I wouldn't say regularly three, or no, I'm sorry, not regularly four. Yes, regularly 3 hours. There's a lot to talk about, and it's something that comes up in the show a lot. My co-host and I, we decided years ago when we discovered we were both obsessed with Veronica Mars that we couldn't have a single conversation about it because we wanted to do a podcast. And then like 3 years later, we finally started it, and there was too much stuff bottled up. So if that sounds like your jam, if you really want to get into the weeds, check out Come On Now, Sugar, wherever you get your podcasts.
And if you've been listening to the show for a while, you've heard Ryan Mogi on a bunch of our episodes from earlier this year. She was on our Valentine's Day episode. So you know you like that episode, and you know you like this episode. So go check out Colin's podcasts. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Nintendo Cartridge Society. Remember, please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. If you like the episode, go over to Facebook or Twitter, wherever you share stuff, and share it there. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Patrick_Ellers. Mark is at MKE Mitchell, and the show is at NinCart Society. Colin, you're not really engaging with Twitter anymore, are you?
No, not really.
All right. And then we also have a Facebook page, which is just Nintendo Cartridge Society. Olivia Duncan made our logo. Our theme music is provided by 8-Bit Betty. You can get more of his music by going to 8bitbetty.com or by listening right now. For my co-host, Mark Mitchell, this is Patrick Eller saying thank you for listening.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.